We're live. We just went live. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Public Works Advisory Board meeting for the City of Morro Bay for January. It is Wednesday, January 17th. Thank you for joining us. All members are present and accounted for, with the exception of Dr. Dorfman, our Vice Chair. And let us start first with our moment of silence, please. Thank you. Okay, on to number three, acceptance of agenda. Has everybody had an opportunity to look over the agenda? And is everybody okay with the order? Okay. Everybody? Okay. All right, so we're going to go with the agenda as is. Let's move on to number four, which is our announcements. And I'll start off to the left side of me and move on down the table. Bill, do you have any?
No.
Jane?
Okay, I have two announcements. There's going to be an unmet transportation needs meeting that we talked about at our last meeting. We said it would be in February, but now I have a date and a place. It's going to take place on February the 7th at 8:30 a.m. A nice person named Tom Gillum, he works for SlowCog, and I called him to make sure he'd be receptive to your phone calls. He can be reached on 781-1520, and you can call him, and if you have some needs that you feel are not being met but you can't make it to the meeting, to express them in person, he would be the person to at least call, and then you could certainly follow that up with an email. Okay, second announcement is the city is holding a priority setting meeting. Very, very important, setting priorities for the budget and for the actions for 2007. That's going to be held in just another 12 days. It's going to be held on January the 29th at 7 o'clock p.m. here in the Veterans Hall. And they're really trying to encourage the public to show up. You know, we got a sales tax increase. One of the things that we would want to talk about is how would that money be used. I mean, there's a whole lot of issues out there. It's a matter of setting the priority and very important as to what gets accomplished in the year 2007. And they really want the public input on that. It's a real focus on getting your input. So those are the two items. That, again, is January 29th, 7 o'clock, here in the Veterans Hall.
Thank you, Jane. Noah, do you have any announcements?
Just briefly, we talk a lot about trees here, and a good way to get trees going is start with young trees. And our Morro Bay Community Library right now has three beautiful Catalina Island Oak trees that are just dropping acorns like crazy, big, healthy acorns. And the Catalina Island Oak is obviously from the islands, and it's just a perfect street tree for our area, strong, upright growing. And I recommend if you take an acorn, you put it in the ground about an inch or so in an area that you know, look up, take a look for utility lines above and for potential water lines below. It's good to be aware of the area that you're planting it, but it's a great way to get a tree going in the short term if you are going to be doing some other tree work and you'd like to get some young ones coming up, get down to the library.
Thank you, Noah. Okay. And Roger, how about you?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, please. Thank you. Excellent idea, Noah, by the way. I have two announcements that I would like to acquaint the viewing public with and our citizens. This coming January 24th, it's a Wednesday, sometime between 6 and 8:30 p.m. at Temple Beth David, a program titled The Sun Also Rises, Building Performance and Passive Solar. Construction means that are more fitting for a planet that is in sad shape. The second announcement is another little program titled Little House on a Small Planet. It is a slideshow and a book signing by the two authors, and it's being held Thursday, January 25th, 6:30 p.m. at the San Luis Obispo City County Library in San Luis. It is open to the public. There is, however, a $5 admission fee. I think that's to cover the cost of bringing the authors to the presentation. Again, an opportunity to see what's out there in the marketplace vis-a-vis construction, et cetera, for affordable housing, affordable construction, smaller construction on smaller properties, et cetera. So if you're interested, please avail yourself of the opportunity. Again, January 25th, 6:30 p.m., Slow City Library. And those are my two announcements, and thank you very much.
Roger, could you repeat the address of the Beth David?
Beth David, this is for January 24th, 6 to 8:30. It's at 10180 Los Osos Valley Road on the corner of Los Osos and Foothill Boulevard.
Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Yeah, really yes. Nice landscaping project also.
Yes. That's a great opportunity. Very, very excited about what they're doing in this regard.
Okay, any last-minute announcements? No? No, you're set? Okay. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate people bringing us information.
I guess I would say, I was going to say it later on, but this is potentially my last meeting. We've got our elections coming up for the Public Works Advisory Board meetings.
You are reapplying, aren't you?
I am reapplying, but we have space available, so those interviews will be coming up next. Well, the date is still being juggled potentially, but next Wednesday, the 24th, also in the evening. So if you're interested, the City Hall will have more details for you. And come on out.
You got to mention the application.
I didn't tell them that on purpose.
Yeah. Application deadline is this coming Friday.
Thank you. Okay, under written communications, we had one on our table, but it is going to, we don't take as long, so hopefully more people will consider coming and bringing issues to us. Members of the audience wishing to address the board on pertinent matters other than scheduled agenda items may do so at this time when recognized by the chair. Upon recognition by the chair, please state your name and address. Comments are limited to 3 minutes, and pursuant to the Brown Act, the board cannot discuss any matters unless it is listed on the agenda, but can agendize such matters for a later date, such as something we'll have coming up a little bit later. So I'd like to announce that. Please join us when you have things that you'd like to start spreading around and get your information out there and let us know. That's one of the ways we're easy access. And we're here on the third Wednesday of every month at 6 p.m. live at the Vets Hall. So thank you. Number 7 is our consent of calendar, our minutes from December 20th. Has anybody had any corrections or comments on that?
You want to start on the side this time?
Yeah, go ahead, Roger.
I lost the minutes. Yes, there is something. Oh, I got it. Thank you, Noah. During the on the back page of the minutes, during at the bottom there, under the presentation by Darren Brown, during that whole exchange with Mr. Brown and us, etc., comments were made about the design of the sign that they are trying to establish for this All-American Scenic Highway. And they presented a design that I thought was a little crowded.
Yeah, it sounded like they felt so, too. They were
right.
Working on revising.
And I think it was the board's indication that we preferred it to be simple and fairly direct, and yet that isn't mentioned in the minutes, and I would like it to be mentioned in the minutes if that's possible. Sign design was recommended to be kept simple by the board. Is that permissible to add that with the board's permission? Kathy? How does the rest of the board feel about that, to include the, to acknowledge that we did discuss the design of the sign? I would move, okay, therefore, acceptance of the minutes with the... I'm sorry. Yeah. Anyway, that's mine.
Okay. Jane?
Okay. I have a brief comment here, and I see that Barry's not here, so I can't ask...
It just doesn't specify which RFP, and that was for the transportation that Janine had brought to us. that we may be going in with other municipalities for.
I didn't
bring my last month's packet with me. Shame on me.
I might know that Ms. Burlingame became sick this afternoon. She sends her apologies, and she would know the answer to this
she
question.
She would very much know the answer to that.
But we will certainly we'll find out what it is, and we'll insert that into the record.
Thank you.
Desire.
Thank you, Bill. And Mr. Olson, did you have anything? Did you have anything you wanted to correct or comment on for the minutes, Bill? No? Okay. Let's see. I know on the agenda for tonight and on this, it says that I asked for the Wi-Fi and the North Main Street. Those were issues that the board itself had previously wanted. I simply reiterated them to keep them alive, as well as for the agenda tonight. If it reads like it was my sole responsibility requesting that was the board's consensus that we wanted those items on. So I think that could be a little bit clearer. That's item 11 on the back page. That's all that I have. Yes, sir.
Would it be safe then to make an amendment where it says Landis asked that, to replace that with Landis reiterated board request for?
Thank you very much, Mr. Boucher.
Okay.
That'd be excellent. Okay, any other comments or additions? I think you started to make a motion, Roger, for acceptance with corrections.
I move that we accept the minutes with corrections as stated.
Is there a second?
Second
by Jane, and all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
I have a quick question of the chair, if I may, please.
Yes, sir.
Vicki.
I hope I have an answer.
I do, too. I think you will. We have a member in the audience who is here, I believe, to make a comment on our Wi-Fi. And rather than have her stay for the whole meeting because it's the last item, would it be appropriate to listen to her comment at this time if she's willing to speak now or if she can wait, whatever is comfortable? And speaking of Judy Vick.
Since we already approved the agenda item.
Potentially leaving the building after item A.
Well, that was the anticipation, but I don't know what discussion you want to hold on the item. I mean, we're here for you.
It was a public comment that she wanted to make, and we kind of glided over public comment opportunity real quick.
Well, the public comment of things that aren't on the agenda.
Right.
And since the Wi-Fi is on the agenda, that's why.
Okay.
Well, we didn't do that. So I think the staff report will probably be fairly short. I'm okay either way because guess what? I get to stay here no matter which one comes first.
Okay. It's merely a courtesy, however you want to handle
it. Well,
it's
a very good courtesy, and I'm fine either way. Do you guys have any comments on it?
I think you should either flip the Wi-Fi with a nitrate emergency plan, or because asking for one speaker when we have two speakers here to talk on the subject seems like it wouldn't be appropriate to me. To have one speaker speak their piece now, and it would be.
Oh no, I think it would be moving the actual item, moving the entire item up.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm okay either way. One way or another will inconvenience either staff or public. So,
let's continue.
They're okay. All right. Okay. So you wanted to switch them?
No, that's okay. She said that she's comfortable. So we'll. Staff has been here all day long. They want to get out of here early. So let us continue as the agenda states, and I withdraw my request.
Okay.
Thank you for considering it.
Well, thank you. Okay. Item number 8 is our director's report. Information items, no action required. I shall turn it over to Mr. Boucher first or Mr. Cunningham.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, sir.
It's good to see you again. Unfortunately, I missed the last meeting on an unplanned event. Since the last time we spoke, there actually have been, as I'm sure you're aware, many things going on. I just wanted to fill you in. I'm not going in any particular order other than how they show up on the director's report. The Morro Bay Boulevard Quintana Road roundabout project, as you may recall, there was the funding deadline that we had to have a construction contract by the end of December. We ran into some issues with Caltrans when they revoked our encroachment permit and are requiring some redesign. They were able to offer us a an opportunity to keep the funding if we were able to split out any part of the project and execute a contract for that. We were able to identify a small the Harbor Walk project kind of had a similar deadline as was in the December report. We were able to get a six-month extension from the Transportation Commission on that. As you may recall, one of the issues there is that we had not yet received the comments from the Coastal Commission on the plan submittal. We did receive their comments on the 9th of January. I've shipped those off to our designers, and we're meeting on Thursday to go over the draft response and to their comments. Some of them were items that I believe that we had worked out earlier that perhaps, you know, they've got an incredible workload as well and that just may have overlooked. But there are some items that are more pithy, and we'll work those out. To tie into what Board Member Smuckler said, the applications for the Public Works Advisory Board are due at City Hall by the end of work on Friday the 19th, so anyone that's interested, please go by. You see either Bridget, the city clerk, or Jamie at personnel. Get an application form, fill it out, turn it in, have fun with us. And as Noah said, the interviews are scheduled for January 24th. The Slocog Scenic Byways program that was on the board's December agenda, we were scheduled to have that on the city council meeting for next Monday. What we did when we were going through the document for one last time, we found that there were a couple of things missing in the document that we had discussed with Slocog staff before, one of which was the viewshed analysis section. So we have pulled that off the council agenda. We've asked Slocog staff to address those issues, and hopefully haven't heard back from them yet. We sent them a note this morning saying we can't send it to council with a section missing. That's something that we probably should have caught before it came to this board, but I never had the chance to look. It came at the last minute, and we just copied it and sent it out. The fire station, Harbor Street Fire Station apparatus bay, we're back up and running. The City Council approved a contract amendment for the design at the January 8th meeting. We've met with the designers. We're rocking and rolling to get everything back on par and to get the design completed. Simultaneously, we're coming back to the Council at their next meeting, which is part of the mid-year budget review, with a request to allocate funds for the architectural design of the what we call Phase 2, which would be the main building, the administrative and dormitory section of the fire station. The evening of the last PWAB meeting, we had a broken force main at our lift station number 3 at the intersection of South Bay Boulevard and Quintana Road. One thing particularly critical there, if you know the area, that area drains directly into the estuary, and it was critical that we contain that situation immediately. We were able to contain it without any flow going out into the drainage system or into any waterways. We wound up having to we shut the lift station down. We got pumper trucks and pumped all night long, pumping out of the lift station and taking it into town. And then we were able to, a contractor was able to mobilize the next morning, dig a large hole. We found the problem and repaired it. And that took a little, almost 2 full days. The other item that I wanted to highlight that's not on the agenda is the evening of the last council meeting, we had a water main break at the end of Vachon Street right up against the highway. That line, our records indicated it was a transmission line. As you may recall, you have in the water system, you have transmission lines that take the water to the tank sites, and then you have a distribution that goes and feeds the individual customers. All the atlases showed that the only pipeline in this area was a supply line. And so we started turning off valves and doing all this, and it wasn't working. So then we started looking for undocumented connections between the pumping system and the distribution system. Found none there, and it was only several hours later that we determined that it was some undocumented vestige of part of the old county waterworks system that was still alive that was shown to have been removed. By the time we fixed it, we wound up with water being off on both sides of the highway for a number of hours. We estimate that we lost about 250,000 gallons of water, ran out into the street. There were four houses that were affected. Several houses got some water into their garages, clearly into the yards and into the landscaping, and apparently one into some crawl space underneath the home. But water service was restored by about 11:30 p.m. that night. That we're in the process of sorting out. And that's the end of my items. I'll turn it over to Mr. Cunningham unless you have any questions.
I have one question. The line that actually broke, you said that it was part of an old county system. Where was it coming from and going to?
What had happened is that when the highway was, when the current Highway 1 was built in about 1960, the County Waterworks District built a parallel water line, a 6-inch water line, all the way along the west side of the highway in a narrow easement. A couple years later, they installed the Vashon Booster Station, which is that the little building that's right at the end of Vashon. And what that did is it converted most of that line into a transmission main, and they built a discrete pumping line up to the Blanca Street tanks. The records indicated that when they put in that pumping line, they disconnected the rest of that 6-inch line that ran all the way up past Yerba Buena into the old North Point, what's now North Point, used to be the Point Motel, and they made a physical disconnection and converted the remainder of that transmission line into part of the distribution system. As it turns out, that didn't quite happen, and apparently they made that separation by closing a valve rather than physically disconnecting the pipe. So that was the essential problem that we had, was a piece of pipe that wasn't documented, was live, was leaking, in a side yard, in a 5-foot wide area between a garage with an overhang and the freeway fence, tucked in behind a booster station with overhead power lines. We couldn't get it. It was not fun. But it all got remedied. We're amending the atlases so that we'll know it's there.
Any other questions for Bill's portion of the report?
Yes, please. I do have one.
Roger, go ahead.
I'm going to have you substitute for Bruce on an item, please, Bill. Under the category of wastewater, the first sentence caught my eye, and I'm really asking for clarification. The Regional Water Quality Board hearing on wastewater treatment plant permit delayed indefinitely.
Yes, that item, the permit, I believe, was due for hearing maybe a year and a half ago, and it was put off on monthly or 2 or 3 month extensions. And the last time that the regional board decided not to hear it, they did not set a new date.
Also,
analysis, looking at options for tertiary treatment that might be outside the existing wastewater plant. What we have been doing on that study as we kick it off is we've been taking water samples of the Morro Bay system and the Cayuca system and the blended system in the effort to determine the suitability of the existing wastewater for tertiary purposes. And what we're finding is that In simplest terms, our wastewater stream is really pretty good, suited for tertiary purposes. The biggest thing you worry about is salinity, the level of total dissolved solids. We are in pretty darn good shape there. Cayucas has higher total dissolved solids. We do have concerns about the water softening. That's why we're taking samples upstream and downstream of Culligan. We do know that we don't have many home regeneration units on soft water anymore, which is a real boon for us. That really facilitates a lot of things that we would like to do, but we still need to accommodate the Culligan facility and try to make that work. But what we've seen so far is that at least from a salinity standpoint, there really isn't a roadblock for the Morro Bay wastewater stream. By the time Culligan is in it and Cayucas is in it, when it reaches the existing wastewater plant, it's too saline to be used without what I've been referring to as quaternary treatment, going a step beyond tertiary and going to salt removal, which would generally be by a reverse osmosis process. So we're working kind of on parallel paths. Hopefully they both converge in the springtime when the Corolla financial plan and the facilities plan comes in. Hopefully the Cannon plan will come in together and give the decision makers the ability to make a fully informed decision on which way they want to go.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Any other questions for Bill? Mr. Cunningham.
Good evening, Madam Chair, members of the board. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I too missed the December meeting.
Well, let me say that you were both missed, and the reasons for it were very good. And personally, I thank you very much for putting in such extended time to take care of that matter. Great job. Thank you.
Stop it. I'm going to blush on TV.
I'm just kissing because I'm going to be out of here as a chair in another month. So.
High five. Basically, our traffic control sort of intermingled right there at the Quintana, you know, South Bay Boulevard, so that was kind of a challenge. But as far as rerouting everybody, everything kind of went well. We had a couple of complaints, you know, which you'd normally expect, but for the most part, in my opinion, it went very well. And I don't know if you had a chance to drive it, but I think South Bay actually looks pretty good. Got nice new striping down there, you know, with the winter coming on, it's all a good thing. At the bottom of the page, just as an update, the main Radcliffe, just wanted to let you know that there still is that consultant developer efforts out there. We had a meeting in January, so the developer is still considering, you know, the development up at the top, which includes the realignment of Radcliffe over to, you know, Main Street, you know, farther to the north to better improve the site distance. So I know the city council is, I believe they're bringing forth an update of that intersection here probably in February at City Council. So, and just as a note, I don't know how much you track of this, there was a 3-car accident, I believe, a couple weeks ago at Radcliffe in Maine. I haven't received the traffic report, but, you know, I usually get that, usually a few weeks or a month afterwards, and certainly take a look at that. That all plays into the redesign and the cause and effect. On page 3, I just wanted to bring your attention, the MTBE issue is still kind of hanging around out there. It seems like it's a mighty slow snail, but the Shell Equilon consultants are still going through getting Caltrans's permits to go into the Caltrans right away, do some testing out there, again, just to send some probes, just to make some last-ditch efforts to see if there's any hiding MTBE plumes out there that, you know, where we didn't have the monitoring wells. So that's that information is still to come. And on the back page, page 4, as an update, the Quintana Main Street development, you know, everybody's been pretty concerned about when are we going to open up the bike path. That's another little issue that seems to be just cruising along at snail's pace, but I have talked to the superintendent out there. The last little issue, they're actually trying to get occupancy for the 3 or 4 of the homes that they've built up there, so that's been their primary goal. What they're waiting for right now is I got from them. The only other thing at the very bottom is trees. You know, with the last month or so, we've had a lot of winds, we've had a lot of cold weather. You know, winds generally make people pay attention. They tend to go outside. They see trees blowing. They start to get worried. They look at the tree, the health of the tree. They get nervous that here's this tree that's not looking too good. It's, you know, unfortunately on its way out. They get very nervous, and they tentatively start putting the city on notice that here's this, you know, 80-foot pine tree out in front of my house. It's a city tree. And they're getting very nervous about it. So I have been receiving, and of course this coincided with Mr. Roger Pelletier's retirement, but I have been getting a lot of requests to analyze and evaluate, and there's been several of those that they'd like the tree removed. And as a matter of fact, the list that I gave you, I needed to add one more, and that's on the corner of Pacific and Bernardo. I believe it's the northwest corner. There's a pretty dead pine tree up there. So trees are becoming a big issue. I do have an item at City Council this coming Monday regarding a request for a mid-year budget for additional money to go after and deal with some of these trees. So hopefully the end of January, first part of February, I may be removing a few trees. I'm trying to get this all done because we get into that mid-February nesting period, and we try to avoid trimming trees and taking out trees during the nesting period just to be sensitive to our bird friends. With that said, that's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Since you gave us this nice packet that we'd asked for with the street tree policies and vegetation removal and that kind of stuff, when somebody puts the city on notice that a tree is, you know, something should be done with it, if you go out and make an assessment and say it's okay, are they then forced to get the arborist to come forward and say, yes, in fact, it's a problem? Or has there been a big discrepancy between the complaints that you've been getting and your assessment of the trees? I know they trained you in trees as well as engineering.
It's all over the board. I mean, sometimes you go out there and the people want the tree removed because trees drop limbs, and when they're falling from 60, 70 feet, they don't just land softly like leaves, to the point where they are a liability and a public safety hazard, then I have to start making the choices, and usually I'll turn to an arborist. You know, we get arborist reports that evaluate the tree and say, yeah, it's becoming, you know, they kind of have a little report card, if you will, and when it gets to a certain number of points and it's basically a hazard, then I have to make the choice and I have to go through the process to remove it. If it's a healthy tree and I come out there and I say, I'm sorry, I know you want the tree removed, but it's healthy and I'm not going to remove it, the other option that they have is they can basically petition the city and request a ruling from Mr. Bruce Ambo to have it removed, and if he basically says no, then they can appeal that to Planning Commission, and if they want it removed and they get that appeal approved, then they're basically taking out at their expense. But it does have to go through the public review process to get approval on that.
Okay. So. And one other question. I dug through my old packets to try to find our last street tree list, the actual list, and I couldn't find it. Can we get a copy of that at Public Services? Thank you.
You bet. I actually think it's online.
Oh, okay. Better yet.
And following that up, I was curious as to when would be an appropriate time for the city to discuss updating the list potentially. And
it was just updated, what, like 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
Yeah, I want to say it. You know, with Wally and everything, I was going to say 2 to 3 years ago.
Actually, if it was Wally, it was probably more like 3 or maybe even 4 years ago.
Well, you know, even though he left PWAB, he still was involved and kind of did work down with Roger, and, you know, he was a good volunteer soldier.
Can I step in on this conversation?
Sure.
Please. Who placed the city on notice? Were they private residents, citizens?
I get individuals, and I get groups of individuals. You know, I've got some property owners where, take example, Center Court. You know, I've had 4 or 5 of the residents all sign a petition saying this tree is hazardous, and, you know, and it's dropping stuff, and it's, you know, an imminent safety hazard, and basically puts the city on notice.
Okay.
And it is a city tree.
I took a look myself today at a few of the trees that you noted. To an untrained eye, they look pretty healthy to me, although there are some of the trees that have limbs that are dead and could probably be trimmed. Who is going to pay for the arborist to come out and determine what?
Wait.
And finally, what are we doing about replacing the trees that we're taking down? Because I don't know whether anybody else has noticed it, but we have lost a lot of trees in our community. The urban forest is shrinking rapidly, and as a result, we're also losing habitat areas. And I'm wondering, what are we doing as a community or as a city to make sure we have as you say, an urban forest, and make sure that we can protect viable habitats for fauna, et cetera, are we replacing them?
Well,
I guess is my question.
If you read through that Muni code, the stuff, the handouts, there's replacement policies, and I hate to say it, Roger, but I actually respectfully disagree with you. As far as I'm concerned, and I've been here 5 going on 6 years, we've replaced a lot more trees than we've taken out, a lot more. Every time development comes in, we have a policy that when a new development, and this was, say, a vacant lot, and so when a vacant lot comes in, we have a policy that they put in a street tree with, when they develop that lot, every 50 feet. So there's a lot of trees that never existed, and every time we take out a tree, we replace it at least 1-to-1. If they take it, if a property owner takes it out for, you know, for whatever personal reasons, or a developer takes it out, then it's replaced on a 2-to-1. And I'll remind you, we still have that list of property owners who have, you know, indicated to us that they would like a street tree. So when there's when there's situations where a developer is required to put in a tree and there's just really no physical place to put it because of driveways or utilities or, you know, whatever the situation, then so that we don't lose that opportunity to put in that replacement tree, we have a waiting list of private property owners who want that tree in their front yard. So we have replaced a lot of trees, and I would say we have more trees now than we did in 2002 when I came here.
I graciously stand corrected, and thank you for that.
And I'll actually, you know, it's not a credit to me. This is, you know, Roger Pelletier has been very diligent in making sure that he's out planting trees, he's out taking care of them. You know, Nick and myself, we deal with the developer side of it. Mm-hmm. So we're always, you know, making sure that if they have to take out a tree, that they're replacing them on 2-to-1
basis. Okay, finally, just so I can reassure the citizens at home.
Tree, you know, yes. I mean, visually there's an impact that the trees aren't as big and we're losing some of these big monsters, but that's a sort of a part of life.
I admit I may be responding to the little 10-foot ones that I don't see. Thank you.
Quick follow-up to that. I'm curious about on our the major vegetation removal. Where it says a tree or an area should be defined as major vegetation, if it's voluntarily identified as a landmark, a tree or vegetation, would someone need to register if they felt like they had a very special grove of trees or a landmark tree that was you know, historic and natural value? Is that something that is there a registry in the city?
I had the same question. What is voluntary, and how does that process happen? Do you know?
Curious about that.
I'm not aware of any. You know, we did have a historic, you know, Franklin Riley tree. We no longer do. For the most part, that program, the major vegetation is managed by planning department. So Mike Prater actually is the one that will go out and kind of evaluate, you know, the threshold of major vegetation and criteria based on impacts and visuals and so on and so forth. So, you know, I'm not sure how to answer it for you. You know, and I'm not aware of any historic or protected, you know, groves. Mr. Boucher's been here longer than I. He may be aware of some.
It was listed in the paperwork that we got.
Yeah.
That there was a classification for historic trees or voluntary. I couldn't find the paragraph.
It's on the second, actually, second page, but there's, I guess, page 2. Section 8, number 5.
Page it's under the section pursuant to section 17.20.020B, major vegetation shall be defined as, and number 5 says, city designated or voluntarily identified landmark trees. And I was curious as to what is a voluntarily identified landmark tree. I had several questions on this part, and I knew
sounds
it was
like
out
a major
of
city tree to me.
Well,
that's the way you know, I think city council has addressed it. These large trees are a part of our urban forest, and they do want them protected. Mm-hmm. So these major trees, we're trying not to take them out unless it's for, you know, right. Due cause.
no matter, you know, do I designate the olive tree in somebody else's yard as historically significant or a landmark tree, or do I volunteer my own Monterey pine to be such? So we're starting to get into a lot of these questions. Does city staff go, you know, looking around in backyards to try to identify these? So it was kind of difficult to come up with an agreed upon methodology to identify landmark trees. It's not like we're El Paso de Robles, you know, the Paso of Oaks or a Thousand Oaks, where you've got where clearly the origin of the community is derived. You know, we've got so the designated trees are the ones that the city's designated, and they're primarily the big yukes, the Franklin Riley yuke, the one by Mrs. Lyons placed on a Morrow, and several others that we have identified as significant trees. And I don't recall that we've had any identified on private properties. There are some candidates, perhaps, but those owners would need to step forward and say, I would like this to be designated a landmark tree. And then Mike will look at, you know, does it, you know, maybe a laurel or a sycamore, some other tree that would be indigenous to our area, or even a Monterey cypress, perhaps, and then that process could go.
I know the last big one that I remember, the one across from the police station, that there was controversy as to whether or not it was diseased or not, and that was it was just so huge and such a landmark. I think it was, for anybody who'd been here for a while, we just knew. Yeah. But
that one was, that had a plaque on it. That's the one we call the Franklin Riley tree, and there it is no longer.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to say, kind of reiterate, the documents that I've got here, since the public may not know. Now, these whole packets are at the library, right? But these documents aren't exactly online, right, in our packet? You know, they're not online for the public to get on the city website, but they are at the library?
Well, one of them's right out of our Muni code. The other one's over in planning with the major vegetation, so I don't believe either of those are online.
Okay. So for the public, the one document that we have is, it says City of Morro Bay Public Services Department. Is there a title here? Major Vegetation Removal, Replacement, and Protection for Private Property Tree Removals. And that talks about how and when you can remove things on private property. There's also on the second page here, it says Major Vegetation Removal, Replacement, and Protection Guidelines, approved by City Council on July 24th, 1995. The other document are codes that run from 12.08.040, master tree list, and you know, if you think there's gaps in it, then you know that's our democratic process, is to get involved. People can come to our meetings, but we're advisory. We don't set policy. We can only advise City Council to do something. They can choose whether or not to follow that. Planning Commission is policy setting. And the City Council as well. So those are the best bodies to address when you have issues about, do you want to change the replacement, or do you want to advocate for trees, or do you want to advocate for no trees? But be heard. So I just wanted to let the public know these were the documents that were given to us in our packet, and that's what we're addressing, you know, in this little bit of discussion. I had one question, and this would go out to both of you, and it's on the pages with the section numbers. It's the bottom of page 1, section 12.08.070. The next to the last line of that is talking about trees being removed and notification. If in the opinion of the Director of Public Services, a tree is determined to meet the above criteria, posted for a minimum of 10 days, and all property owners and residents within 300 feet shall be notified of scheduled tree removal. That doesn't happen. That's been a little breakdown on all the appeals in the city, where legal property owners are notified, but residences aren't. The trees themselves are posted, but the residences aren't actually notified. It's just the posting on the tree, and on some things the property owners are notified but the residents are not. I know I was involved in an appeal with the city, and the notification was so bad that my appeal came up to City Council and I was never notified it was on the schedule. And there was a lot of talk about how that was really appalling, we should fix it, but it really was never fixed. And I know it's a lot of work, but it's just kind of my little plug to say we still need to work on that a little bit. It's a hard one, but you know, the difference between notifying residents and property owners. Property owners, it's a pretty easy list, but residents means you have to actually go to the residents and put something on the door. And I know we don't have a lot of manpower to do that, but I just wanted to bring it up that it's something that I'd still like to see us work on.
Well, okay. if I recall, that actually came into being, I believe it was Mayor Yates, actually. And the whole idea of that posting and noticing was really, as he deemed it, to avoid the neighborhood shock. So, you know, that everybody drives home, drives to work, they drive around the neighborhood, they see this big tree, and all of a sudden they come home at 5 o'clock and go,
it's gone.
Where's that tree? What happened? What's going on? Yeah. You know, and then they, so that was a problem. Don't put it in the water bill. It's just like a planning issue. We post a poster thing on the tree for the 10 days,
right.
And we mail out to all the residences within the 300 feet. And I believe planning's policy on that is both to the resident and the registered, you know, property
okay.
owners.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. That hasn't happened. Okay. I've been within 200 feet of several projects and have found by reading the sign, never received any notification either to my P.O. box or to my house. So I'm just saying that it was a breakdown. I mean, I know it's supposed to happen, but it doesn't happen. And the posting on the property for a development, the posting on the tree itself, yes, that does happen. I have been seeing that. But, of course, for me, those things are really hard to read. Usually when I see them on the sign, on the property or on the tree, I have to go into public service and get a copy I can read with a magnifying glass because they're too small.
Now, do keep in mind, and let's say this is based on a development. So when a developer comes in and he's got his project and he's proposing to take out a tree, what generally we do is we post that tree, we send out the notice to the residences, and we do that prior to the Planning Commission so that that
right.
Planning Commission meeting serves as a public hearing
right.
so that if, you know, you had a problem with taking out that tree as a part of the development, the Planning Commission meeting serves as your opportunity to come in there. So,
right.
so a lot of people don't seem to click on that.
No, I'm getting that okay. part. I mean, I think you're quoting what the policy is, and I'm telling you from personal experience on one, two, three projects of development and two projects on tree removal. Never once have I received a notice, and I've had the same
all
address.
All within 300 feet of your house?
All within 300 feet, within one block. Within less than a block. Not catacorner through my block.
Okay.
So, and that was one of my problems with the appeal for a development. That wasn't tree removal. It was for development, where it was two doors from my house, and I never received a notice. I appealed the process to the Planning Commission and to the City Council. My appeal came up to the City Council, and I was never even notified that my appeal was on the agenda. I found out by accident through the City Clerk. And I said at that City Council meeting, you need to know that there's a gap. The notification isn't happening. All of the City Council was appalled that that was the case and said we need to work on it, and nothing was done. And I'm not trying to attack. I'm just saying it's something we need to keep working on because it still hasn't trickled down to the actual process of it happening. So, and if you want, I'll come in and talk to you later and show you the exact site.
Actually,
so
I would appreciate it.
Okay,
because
sure.
I like trees, but you know the urban forest and stuff like that is protected.
Thank you.
May I add something? If I, along with what Vicki was stating, notification. You said earlier, Frank, that. If a property owner, if you declared a tree to be viable, it's a healthy tree and doesn't need to come down, and the property owner is still upset and wants the tree removed, said property owner could go to the Public Works Director and he could approve. Is that correct? Would he go against an arborist and your findings?
And then
if that is true, what recourse do the citizens have to save the tree?
Now you got to follow that process. You got petitioners or property owner wanting to come in to take the tree out,
mm-hmm.
and let's say the arborist says no, it's a healthy tree, and I say no, it's a healthy tree, and I don't see any liability. I would imagine Mr. Ambo would have the authority to override that because he's identified as the decision maker. Again, then it would be posted. You know, and all the notices would be sent out to the property owners, so that's where they would be able to chime into the process to be able to say, oh, no, we don't want it, and they would be basically appealing Mr. Ambo's decision, and it would go to the Planning Commission for, you know, ultimate decision. which again, I would imagine could be appealed again to the city council.
So there's a pretty, noticing
there's
process.
A pretty good due process for
Thank you.
For all of this.
Okay. That's really all I wanted to be assured of. Thank you.
Jane, you had something earlier before I went off on my tangent
my
of notification.
My earlier comment was kind of to add to Roger's, and I think that what we're seeing is people that it maybe are not real, haven't been here forever in the community because we just moved here about 5 years ago, is that the big trees, the big pine trees, the Monterey pines are coming down, and they may be being replaced, but nothing of that magnitude, and even it doesn't look like trees will ever grow to that magnitude, you know, the kind of trees that are being put in. Am I wrong about that? Are there pine trees being put back in, or is there anything tall?
You bet. A couple of them that Roger has just replaced happen to be redwood trees.
Good.
But, you know, we do try to be a little selective on, you know, putting a redwood tree down in downtown business in a little, you know, little planter box in the sidewalk is, you know, could use a little thought process.
Just an important point, when you're creating more of a surface that will absorb rain and water instead of, you know, creating runoff and so on. So I appreciated your time on that, Frank.
You bet.
No, Madam Chair, if I jump, I don't know if it was made clear to you. These two documents are kind of standalone documents. The one that's listed with the letterhead that says major vegetation, this is for private property trees,
right,
and only for private property
right.
trees, and that's administered through the planning division. The other document, this is section 1208 of the municipal code, and this applies only to trees
to
in the public rights of way,
right.
which is administered
I'm
through.
I'm sorry,
Frank.
I didn't specify that
but
more clearly
I mean,
for the
there
public.
There is a clear differentiation between the two.
Well, some people don't know what's a, you know, that you know, there are some guidelines for taking out your own trees and that the street trees are, you know, in the right-of-way, and I know there's confusion on that. Okay, is there any other questions for Frank or Bill for staff report?
I would move that we accept the director's report.
I don't think we need to have a motion for accepting it.
But
oh, let's just move. Okay. Our next item was old business, which there is none, and then we'll move on to new business. That would be the Mr. Boucher's, I believe, actually both of you, the nitrate water emergency notification plan. It says Mr. Boucher, but I didn't know, Frank, if you had anything that you're going to add with that part.
I was going to eat a hot dog.
Yuck on hot dogs.
I would just like to give a little bit of background on this, and it's maybe a fundamental part of what we were trying to achieve through this proposed notification plan. Is discussion a little bit about what nitrate is, what it is not, and the health risks, the identified health risks in drinking water. Nitrate is a compound that is commonly found in water and food. It's found in cured meats, as Frank was alluding to. It's also found in root vegetables. Concentrations of in cured meats can be as high as 200 milligrams per liter. There are limits. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration does put limits on it. There's also probably the most common, at least in our area, the most common source of nitrates you will find is in commercially applied fertilizers. And as such, many crops, particularly root crops, as in our case, and what we've seen an elevation in the nitrates as the agricultural practices of the Moro and the Chorro Valleys have changed over a period of years. And what we're seeing now is that intensified row crops in the flats and now increasing orchards on the hillsides. The health risks of nitrates in drinking water is of most concern to infants. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry, Bill. So I just wanted to throw in there that landscaping and residential fertilizers also would potentially contribute.
Yes.
It's an important.
Yes, they can. The nitrate levels, elevated nitrate levels in drinking water are health risks to infants and pregnant women. That's the most acute. What the nitrates do is in an infant or in a fetus's digestive system, There is bacteria that exists, that the nitrates react with the bacteria to form nitrite. Nitrite then attaches to the hemoglobin, reduces the blood's ability to carry oxygen, and results in blue baby syndrome and, in the worst case, suffocation. What has been documented was that once an infant grows to the point where they start producing stomach acids, the stomach acids kill the bacteria that starts this chain. You have the nitrates with the bacteria forming nitrate, which then combines with the hemoglobin. But the stomach acids kill the bacteria, and therefore the nitrates don't cause as much of a problem in the later years and in older children, young adults, and full-aged adults. Nitrates are consumed and excreted readily. As a matter of fact, there's just one thing here about the potential positive benefits of nitrates, but that's another issue. So when we had the elevated condition, I went straight to the Department of Health Services website. They have templates for the notification process, and I've included that in the package, which is on the letterhead towards the end, the drinking water warning. This is straight off the Department of Health Services website. This is the required notification language. Now, they say you can change it, but why would you change mandatory language? And so that this notice that you see in your package, this is the official notice, and it says those: don't give the water to infants, pregnant women should not consume television. One is to post in conspicuous places, and another is to do delivery to the customers. Now the mandatory language does allow for us to do additional methods if they can be reasonably calculated to reach the public that we're trying to reach, and I think that's what we're looking at. There's also two forms of notification. One is the primary, and the other is the secondary notification. For example, if you notify a hospital, for example, that's the primary notification. Then it becomes the responsibility of the hospital administration to inform everyone down their chain. Similarly with the schools, as when we talked to Telmar Elementary during the nitrate situation, we talked to the principal and talked to the clerical staff, and it was became their responsibility to notify the teachers and the students and through that chain. So that's the difference between the primary and the secondary notifications. So kind of putting it in as much of a nutshell as possible, what we're proposing to do for the nitrate notification, not for a general emergency, coliform, act of terrorism, something like that, but for the specific purposes of nitrate notification, is to notify all the English and Hispanic television and newspapers. As we found this past time, the outreach to the Hispanic community was a particular challenge. We've got that information now, and we want to be able to use that in future. We are in the process of developing a database for all the local medical practitioners, most particularly the general practitioners in the Morro Bay area and all the obstetricians, gynecologists, and pediatricians countywide. The purpose of that, obviously, is that they have, in their database, they have the access to who are the infants, who are the pregnant women in Morro Bay, and to ask them to perform those secondary notifications.
Essentially like a phone tree, so one person doesn't have to do all the work.
That's correct. So, and they know, and the pediatricians and the OBGYNs will know who these people are. And in the case of perhaps someone that doesn't have a doctor, the public health clinics as well, certainly. And then, of course, going through the county health department, which was another kind of a situation. But the county health department's role in this is restaurants and other food service businesses. Now, I can go, of course, you know me, I love to go in luxuriant detail, giving you all the information you want and then some. But those are basically the three critical elements of this is in the minus 6 months to plus 6 months range. I think we really need to go the extra mile, extra 10 miles or however far we need to go to make sure we do the best job we can to notify those individuals as soon as possible. So having said that, and we also, the other thing that we would like to propose is the nitrate situation is limited to our groundwater resources. When we're on state water, it isn't really a health issue. So what we're proposing to do is, in advance of the program state water shutdowns, in advance of the times that we know we are going to be using significant amounts of groundwater, to put the notices out, in post them in conspicuous areas, and sending out notifications in the water bills that we will be having the switch over. Here's some of the information. Here's what we experienced in the past. Here's some of the things that you might look at. You might use bottled water, you might use reverse osmosis or ion exchange or some other methods of treatment for nitrate water.
Yes. Question, if I may, please, in regards to what Vicki was asking earlier, water bills do not sometimes get to renters.
Correct.
And we have a large Hispanic population, or I should say, of the Hispanic population, a large is renters, are renters, and they never, so is there a means, are you establishing a means of finally notifying renters in our city of?
Well, the means that I was proposing to do for the Hispanic community contacts are through the public health clinics and some of the Hispanic businesses in the community.
Right. Keep in mind, too, on this one, it wasn't notifying every single person in the city. It was notifying the demographic groups that were vulnerable to it, which would be the children and the infant, you know, the infants under 6 months old and pregnant women. And maybe the best way to get through those are through the healthcare people than to try to individually find them. You know, is it what I'm saying is a different case than having to notify everyone in the city, but having to notify those demographic groups that needed to be notified for the medical guidelines that we had from the state?
But I think, if Roger, you're referring to the advisory, not the public health contamination notice, but the pre-shutdown advisory letter?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and that was what I was looking at from that regard, was to outreach to the Hispanic community via the public health agency and through the business, the Hispanic.
But what about our five renters? Of anything that the city wants to notify its residents of, how do we get to renters? That's been the big...
Yeah, that's a real concern, and it goes beyond just the perhaps who might be renting a single-family dwelling or a granny unit, but when you get into situations like apartment buildings or mobile home parks, where, you know, using the example perhaps of Silver City, if the manager is notified, we would presume that there would be a secondary notification, that notifying the manager would then result in the manager notifying the 40 or 50 or 60 or 80 residents within that property. So I think that's where it comes in, is it becomes, and that's what we need to clarify within this, and hopefully people just don't summarily toss these notices.
Bill?
Yes.
On that, is there a way when we decide on the language that would go in the water bills, if it goes to, if you're going to write one notice, can we put language in there that asks, you know, property owners or property management companies or apartment managers to do secondary notification to all of their renters?
Yes, and that's the secondary notifications are I won't say as important as the primary, but as you can see, there's a lot of people that we have difficulty reaching. And whether it be someone that is a renter or someone in an illegally converted garage or something that we may not even know are there.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we find those people? How do we get to the people that need to know? And that's the secondary notifications that I hope that we can succeed with.
I think you're to be commended for the efforts. And as I said earlier to you, I you know, with all of the confusion and et cetera that took place with this issue, we're learning from it.
Absolutely.
And from that, it won't happen again. And I think, you know, again, I commend you for your efforts. I commend city staff for the efforts they're doing now. But please keep in mind that a process needs to be defined on how to notify renters and those that don't get the bills. And somehow we need to come up with one. And as long as that's in the process and that's being done as we speak, then I think we can rest assured that it won't happen again next time. And thank you.
And I think putting a flyer in the water bills may in of itself not be the right way to go. It's been used in the past as I think the methodologies to get the notices to all the people are one thing, but to get them to open it up and digest it is another. But, I mean, we'll do the best we can, certainly.
Not to push aside the conversation about the short-term notification discussion and how we're going to deal with this situation in the future, but I really like the idea of also including in this sort of dialogue. It doesn't need to be that developed, but just the idea that we'd like to research and move in the future in a direction so we make sure that we are doing everything we can to avoid polluting our own groundwater through different, you know, city operations and techniques, and to make sure that is also included in this conversation and get us in that direction so we're reducing the chances of this happening again, because state water is state water, but there's a potential for an emergency to happen to state water, and our groundwater is our potentially our most valuable resource. Right. So,
and we certainly don't want to be in a situation where we're totally reactive, and we're seeing increasing nitrates and are helpless to do something about it, and are forced to go into some sort of treatment in order to mitigate it. Certainly, that's in certain short-term applications, that's all you can really do. But in the long term, you're exactly right. We need to work with the agricultural community and the our community at large to reduce the introduction of these nitrate-laden materials into the groundwater for the long-term health. So certainly, we can put our finger on the dike now, but we better start dealing with the more serious, the broader issue, or we're just kidding ourselves. You're exactly right.
So is that something? Should that be included potentially in our history of developing the documents? That it's, you know, a recommendation that we begin the process of, you know, of reducing our impact?
Well, coincidentally, we have a local groundwater hydrologist that's worked with us for a number of years. We've gotten a proposal from him to start getting our arms around this nitrate situation, and he's submitted a proposal to do a detailed investigation of the situation in the Moro Valley. We're going to start in the Moro Valley. And we are taking that as a recommendation to the City Council at their next meeting, that they allocate the funds necessary to embark upon that. Completed, it'll have strong recommendations on avenues to pursue for long-term remediation of the nitrate issue.
What was the name of the hydrologist?
Tim Cleath and Associates.
Sounds great.
Jane, you had a question.
I had one thing midway. When you started out, you mentioned some ways of contacting people, and one of them was to contact the radio and TV. The other was to post notices prominently. And when you came back around, I didn't hear the post notices prominently.
Well, that was the posting notices, and I don't want to be facetious about this. Looking in other parts of the health department website, they make reference that posting in conspicuous places is subject to approval, and that's for smaller agencies. So I kind of got this vision of maybe, let's say, a Casmalia or maybe Harmony, where you could post it on, you know, on a couple of locations and everyone would see it. I don't know how in a community like Morro Bay or larger than Morro Bay, where you could post enough notices where people would actually...
Couldn't you put them at the grocery store? Because everybody hits the grocery store sooner or later.
And the post office.
And the post office. I mean, there are some pretty obvious library. Mm-hmm. There are a few places that quite a few people visit.
And I think that would be, and I did, I hope I said that for the advisory that we would post, because that's something where there's a certain amount of time. But if it's something where we need to get in touch with the demographic immediately,
right,
I don't think posting is the way to fly. Unless someone happens to be going to the grocery store that day, or have
it's just another additive, but for
the advisory, when it can be up for a matter of days or weeks, and people can read it at their leisure, as long as we're putting it out in advance, so I'm saying put it out 2 months in advance to give people a chance to read it. I think that their postings are a good option, but not for the immediate contact purpose.
If I could reiterate and add that. Under this section, it says, this is from the state, you must use one or more of the following.
Correct.
Posting was not something we had to do. It was one of the three options that were there.
That's correct.
Just for clarification, it wasn't something that we ignored doing out of a list of three have-tos. It was one or more.
That's correct. And I think, as I noted in the narrative, when I started doing the noticing and got hold of the English-speaking television and the English-speaking newspapers, or English...
What's the circulation of our newspapers? How much of our population actually gets that? You know, appropriateness of our unique community and what our demographics are and where our people are. I wanted to say, too, I don't know if anybody else had any other questions for Bill or even Frank on this issue. This is for the public. This is basically an 11-page document that we received, and Mr. Boucher has done an incredible job with documenting every step that he went through to try to notify and to handle the situation when you go to a policy book that tells you this is the what to do and there's nothing there that's relevant, and you got to wing it. I think, I've heard a lot of complaining, and I'd like to say I think the one-man show did a fantastic job, and I want to thank you for doing everything you could. And the best thing we can do is learn from where the gaps were and move on and try to fill them. Notification for a nitrate problem, we're going to learn things about how to notify the public for all kinds of different things that aren't in the book. And, for me personally, I'm a very community-oriented collective. I think the farther away from the people, meaning the higher up in level in government, the less chance they're coming if there's something really bad, because there's going to be too many people to help. We have to take care of each other. And the more mechanisms that we work together on that help us know who each other is and help us spread the word when something like this happens, the better off we are as a community. So I know there's a lot of complaining. I know there's a lot of frustration. I took a lot of complaints from restaurant owners who say we got a call saying it was safe to use the water. We never knew it wasn't. There's not really an active mechanism to say, how do we get a hold of everybody? We've learned things, obviously, that there were mechanisms we didn't know about until it was too late. By the time things were corrected, we had a lot of ideas, and then all we could do was retract what we did.
And I think that was one of the, when I learned so much during this, one of the things was the grocery stores. And, one of the grocery stores has a coffee place, and all the grocery stores use some sort of water to spritz their vegetables. It never really, I knew, we all see that happen, but it didn't click in my mind that, and maybe it was because I thought that spritzing root crop vegetables that are high in nitrates with kind of high in nitrate water might not be a problem, but that turned out to be a real issue with county health. Mm-hmm. And the restaurants and the grocery stores were, so I go, okay, then I don't need to contact them, because right. If we're contacting them for these two limited purposes, we don't need that level of assistance. We don't need to tell Heritage Ranch Water District about this. So I moved on, not dawning on me that the grocery stores were involved in this.
Just to clarify, do you know when the meeting is, at the next council meeting, this is going to be revisited and discussed and presented?
It'll be, I believe, at the February 13th meeting. That's a Tuesday meeting.
Okay. Bill, you've got on here hand delivery to persons served by the water system. But, the Neighborhood Watch is already set up as an organization. Hank Roth heads it up in the police department, and they cover about half of the city, and we should, of course, expand it to cover, get enough people to cover everything. But the Neighborhood Watch people already have their contacts around the neighborhood, and they could, spread the word in their neighborhood in a hurry if the block captains are notified, and there are block captains for all the way through.
Right.
And I think that's one thing that certainly we can discuss in detail should you desire. I think where I looked at that day was, do I have time, number one, to go make 6,000 copies? Because that's what it takes to go to everywhere. Do I have time to make 6,000 copies? Yeah. And the delivery, and what we found was, and I don't know how to deal with it, and maybe it's something that I have to think about more, but I got so many phone calls from people that were panicked that were not within the identified demographic. One lady called me, and you could tell she was crying. She says, I just made soup with this water. You know, this is my meal for the day. Should I eat it? You know, and it's like, holy cow, you know, she's terrified. I don't know that giving a notice or putting a notice on her front door or slipping it under her doormat would have done any more to help her than calling me and talking to me. And that's why I stayed at the office, so that people could have some feedback. But that just made me feel, you know, if and I don't say contact too much because that, you know, it sounds like the lazy person's way out, but if it doesn't affect someone, then I don't want to scare them about it. And that's what it seemed like there was a lot of fear of people and legitimately concerned about it, but they were afraid. And if I wasn't there or someone knowledgeable wasn't there, and this is what I respect a lot what Neighborhood Watch does, but if Neighborhood Watch gives me an important public notice, I'm going to start asking them questions, and they aren't going to know anything. So
I know that was one of your concerns when we offered to help you, that you thought that, you know, an official person's going to need to take these
questions. Long run, you'd probably end up with less panic and disturbance.
Well, and that's one of the complaints I heard was from people that didn't hear about it until it was on the news at 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. Well, you know, and maybe we're kind of used to maybe a little quicker reaction than that, but you know, they basically heard about it right when they got home. It's not all that bad. So I don't know who we really I don't want to say this in a cavalier way, but
you're supposed to have 2020 hindsight. You're supposed to know exactly how long emergencies will last, to know exactly what
well,
to
and
do.
Well, and I guess that was
I'm
part
saying
of it
that sarcastically because when, there's no way you can
you
know.
When I came to that meeting, and it was the evening of this board meeting in November, we were comfortable based on the data we had in hand that our first contingency plan would solve the problem promptly.
Right.
Now that first contingency plan saw yet further unprecedented rises in nitrate levels was certainly a, I won't say a surprise, but certainly a bad situation. But then we were able to move to our second contingency plan, and that did work. So, and I forgot the point I was trying to make, and I'm sorry for that. No, I just thought I really thought that we were going to be able to solve the issue faster, and I really didn't expect when we saw the unprecedented rise in nitrate levels in the Morrow wells, and we switched to the Choro wells, that we would see orders of magnitude in the Choro wells, the levels rising up tenfold.
And how high did that get in your highest reading?
Of the blended water supply. Was 49 milligrams per liter. It was the first reading was 48, which was over the limit of 45 is the limit. And right. This is all nitrates are measured in two different ways, and what we use for ease is it's as NO3. The limit is 45 milligrams per liter. On Wednesday we were 48 milligrams per liter, and on Thursday morning we were 49. By Thursday evening we were down to 46, so we were seeing the trend back down, and by Friday morning we were at 32. So it spiked at 49 and then started to come down.
So Frank, when you told me that it had reached 80, was that just a misstatement?
No, that was an individual
that it was taken care of. And
by Thursday morning we were able to lift the advisory. By then the nitrate levels had gone down to 32 at the King's tank, and we also went out into the Blanca zone, which is the, I won't say most remote, but it's the furthest point of the distribution system from the point of origin, and that was down to 39 milligrams per liter, and they continued to drop through the weekend. So we lifted the advisory Thursday morning. Friday morning, I'm sorry.
So,
question, sure? You let the public know in advance that you're going off the state water. Every responsible person should take his own measures and do what he wants to do to solve the problem. You can buy bottled water at the market. You can, if you got a reverse osmosis unit, you can use it for your drinking and food.
But we have better
take their own responsibility too. You know,
I agree. Yeah. But we have better information now. We have better information as to the extent. We haven't seen nitrates like this before, so we have better information on how bad it can get. We certainly have better operational procedures as to how to prevent it from occurring again. But also, when we have the information available to us in advance of this shutdown, then I really think that doing this outreach is a no-brainer. And advise the people that bottled water, under-the-counter RO units, ion exchange can work beautifully. Some of those charcoal filters, not so good. They can remove lead, they can remove the disinfectant, but not the nitrate. So it's just not a blanket endorsement of home water treatment, but you have to carefully select the type of treatment that works for any particular constituent. And there are those that work for nitrates and those that don't. So actually, what I would like the board to do is consider the matter and then forward a recommendation to the City Council as to what you would like to see the notification program, I will say, be for, not just for the advisory that we will be putting out, but more critically, for the notification plan in the, God forbid, event that elevated nitrates occur again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Boucher. Just because there's urgencies and, you know, we all need to take a little more responsibility for paying attention and not being hysterical and blaming other people for not being prepared, which I think sometimes is the case. If I remember correctly, you had something in here about public hearing. Council holding public hearing for this? Was that in your recommendation?
Well, that was scheduled. It was a scheduled public hearing at the last council meeting when we had the water main break. What the council did is they took some comments and they continued the public hearing. So it should be a public hearing at the next, not the next meeting, but at the first February meeting.
Okay. Does anybody want to bring forth a motion for council to send off to them to try to accept what staff has recommended for some revisions, additions from our learning experience here?
Well, I think that, I don't know what the motion would be. I think staff is working on it. Also, if I'm not mistaken, Betty Winholtz, Council Member Winholtz, is meeting with citizens that formed a committee, and they too are looking into the notification process, not just for nitrates, but for future emergencies.
Right.
And I think once that, are you involved in that, Bill, at all, or Frank?
I'm with Council Member Winholtz. I'm meeting with citizens next week. They articulated some specific questions that they wanted answers to, so we're going to discuss those. I don't know anything beyond that scope.
Okay. Well, I would certainly make a motion that the staff forward our concerns to the City Council and let them know that we're interested and continue with the follow-up.
Anything about accepting the proposed notification plan, the improvements here?
Well, that is it's a proposed plan.
Right. Do we support it as is?
Oh, yeah. As is?
I mean, can we at least say that we definitely support these improvements based on our experience, or... I think it would be a good idea for this board to let council know, yeah, we think we learned a lot from what happened. And
well,
and
I think that will be the motion then.
Yeah?
Let council know that exactly what you just said.
I felt Noah? This was a good report, and one thing that I do feel, though, it would be good to include, although you said it's kind of a no-brainer that schools and daycares would be contacted, but you know, why not cumulative effects? And it's an important population to reach out to. So I would support or ask that that would be added. Yeah, I'd make a motion that we would include daycare and schools in our list here, as far as creating a database of quick hit list of the larger daycares and the public schools in the community. that would be included.
So you're asking for a second motion or an addition?
I would ask that would be an addition to this plan.
I'll accept that.
And then a second part of that would be that I would request a section that says future planning as far as long-term planning as to the effects of our groundwater and what we're doing to protect our groundwater supply, to be as a section that's included in this report. And probably the first thing that would be included in there would be developments of the hydrologist study as the only thing going on currently, but it would at least be included in the report. So it stays with the conversation because I think it needs to.
I was going to ask if you'd be willing to separate them, because I wouldn't. I don't think I'd feel comfortable voting yes on a motion that had all of those things concluded. I would think it would be too. From my standpoint, I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I'm saying that this particular plan, the proposal that staff has, addresses the notification issue. If the board wants to send a second issue to council saying we'd like to see work on notification or outreach on how to change, because to me that's a bigger, broader educational perspective than getting something down so if we have that problem again we can move. Yeah. I mean, like, one's very specific and one's more visionary and long-term. Mm-hmm. Sort of from my standpoint, from how council might perceive our motions, that mixing something that's really specific with something that's really, really broad might be more complicated to really decipher. That's all.
I can see that. I just, I'd really like to see that portion of the conversation at least be mentioned as we discuss these very immediate solutions and proposals as far as how we're going to.
Well, then perhaps what you might do is maybe two motions would be good.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Two separate motions.
You have
motions.
A recommendation on the short term, maybe the immediacy of the plan. If you want to add elements to it, that's great.
Okay.
And then maybe a second for the longer term.
I'm sorry. I thought that it.
I'll second that motion.
Okay.
That's the first motion.
Should we just say that the initial motion that you made died for lack of second, and this is a fresh start?
Oh, yeah.
Well, yes, I wasn't going to.
We're supposed to retract the motion.
I retract my
one.
Beginning motion, and I'll go along. I'll second Noah's motion, which is to send this report as is with the addition of the daycare and public school notifications.
In discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. That's unanimous. And Noah, you want to go on with a second motion?
Yeah, I would move that the back of the report maybe we include a section that says future planning.
Well, that's tying back into the same report that we've already.
The same report, because this is.
But we've already. Wait a second. We've already passed a motion to say that we accept this as is with the addition. So another motion would say. We want council to do.
To consider adding.
X.
I would move that council would consider adding a section to this report that focuses on long-term planning to maintain our water quality and enhance our water quality. To maintain, protect, and enhance the quality of our wells. And I wish Barry was
develop,
here. So smooth.
To be developed? To develop a plan?
Yeah.
Develop a plan?
Yeah, I'm going to start rambling again.
This motion stuff is hard, isn't it?
To maintain, protect, and enhance our groundwater supply.
Doesn't that already exist?
Well, there's going to need to be some adjustments to it.
Well, if we're talking about adjusting something, then we need to be specific about what we're adjusting. So,
well, what I take from that is to take a more assertive stance to for the long-term reduction of nitrates.
See, there he goes
on a basin-wide level. Right.
Thank
That's
you, Mr.
the motion.
Boucher states motion. Does anybody like to second that?
Actually, included in that, I think the first item would be cited the hydrologist report that is coming in.
If Bill understands the motion, I'll be happy to second it.
Yes. Wait till I ask him to read it back for us before we vote on it.
This might not be...
The proposed hydrology analysis as a first step.
Excellent. And I do second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? No. Again, unanimous. Thank you, Mr. Boucher.
No, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. And again, Bill, Frank, I mean, between the water break and the stuff out on South Bay and this nitrate stuff, you guys have... you're ready for vacation. Thank you very much for your dedication, both of you. Seriously, thank you. Thank you. Isn't it nice to be nice to our people that are working so hard instead of complaining about them all the time? This is, we have to work together a little better. Okay, and moving on now to B, and I thank our audience members. Please thank you very much for being so patient with us. We're moving on to 10B, which is discussion of wireless internet system, Wi-Fi. It says requested by Chair Mee. I simply reiterated that the board had wanted this as a consensus. So please, Ann, would you like to go first? Would you like to? Well, let me, for the public, a member of our audience had came to the meeting a couple of meetings ago and spoke under public comment regarding the possibility of the city exploring Wi-Fi, wireless communications for internet access. Because that was under public comment, the board could not discuss it at that time, but we agendized it for a later meeting. Thank you, gentlemen. Good night. We agendized it for a later meeting, and we had some heavy staff reports that came in, so it's deferred it to this meeting. This is not an action item. It's a discussion item. It's giving the board opportunity to ask questions, have a discussion about the possibilities, maybe benefits, drawbacks, and kind of get this subject out into the open a little bit more for the public to get a little information, and hopefully people who are interested will come together and put their energies in it. So right now we have we had Ann Reeves, and Ann, if you want to just come on up, because this is going to be very informal with our discussion with the board and with you, and I believe Judy Vick is here as well. Thank you. If you want to come up together, however you guys are comfortable. We're not city council. We have no protocol, so come on both of you up if you'd like. I'm going to let Ann start. She's done an incredible amount of research that she sent the board members. I would like to do that. I can do a little bit, but I think Ann's got fresher information on it.
Well, I don't have a background in technology, but it is an issue that I have researched.
Could you state your name, please, Ann?
My name is Ann Reeves, and I live in Morro Bay. I have done quite a bit of research on this, and basically it's a system... Is that better?
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Okay. Basically, this is a municipal system that I'm speaking of, and it can be implemented in several ways. Either what is sometimes referred to as the last mile, which is fiber optic, and we have access to a large fiber optic facility here in town. And then the other would be... it would involve putting implements on or building towers, implements on right away, utility poles is one way to implement this kind of a program. I believe I read yesterday that the city of Minneapolis could be covered by something like 15 towers. So it's not ultra-intrusive either way you do it. It's really a matter of having a feasibility study done to see what is the most practical, economical, and effective way to do it for the town that you're talking about. I did distribute a sheet tonight just to indicate, and it's a little bit out of date. There are more cities by now. But it shows how many cities have implemented it, which ones are developing it or considering it. And then there's mention of some numbers in Florida and Vermont, Las Vegas, and Arizona, I believe. I looked at tourist destinations, And one of the reasons I did that is because the benefit of such a development for tourism and for business is part of why I believe it's something that we should look into for our future. The telecommunications industry is very anxious to see this go through, not the municipal so much, buyer or packet. More and more business is going to be conducted. There are other aspects. The private, more private part of it is the access to medical information and consultations with major health centers throughout the country. Most of the major ones have this available, which can be a benefit. And then further into it, you have your emergency services, where they can blast out a warning or an alert with practically a push of the button to everybody that needs to be informed of whatever that emergency is. So there are, it's the future, and so I'd like to look into the future and see where we as a town figure into it. And that's why I originally brought this in front of you.
So if I can ask or clarify, because I don't want to misstate, this is basically internet access, correct? But it's also communications similar to telephone?
It's also, yeah. I mean, many people use Skype or VoIP now.
And the Wi-Fi is, you know, like you said, the fiber optic. I don't know if many people know this, but years ago the plans were one of our old, we used to have oil pipelines,
mm-hmm.
right, where the oil tankers that are up the hills behind Morro Bay would offload and unload to mm-hmm. ships that were out in the bay. You used to be able to look out in the bay and see huge oil tankers out there, and there were pipelines that run, you know, along the ocean floor. And when those weren't used for oil anymore, some of them or one of them was converted to a huge, huge fiber optic trunk that serves the entire Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
I was told at that time it was one of the largest in the United States, coming right, out of Morro Bay. You know, fiber optic. Some of the negative sides or the drawbacks that I heard were the, you know, wireless things that are wireless, be it cell phones or if you've got a wireless hub for your internet, that there's a certain amount of radiation that's put off with that, and there's some health concerns.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of controversy over to the amount, and I don't know. You know,
yeah.
It's just like electromagnetic fields, but fiber optic cable doesn't have those issues. So there's ways to do this overall system without being locked into
Correct.
The potential health
Correct.
Risks. The idea as a municipal owned system is that the city of Morro Bay could in fact own its own internet world in a way, its own connection for its citizens. Is that kind of where this is going?
Indeed.
Some of the things that came to my mind when I was reading some of the information and looking through it, I'm not saying this to promote or not, I'm trying to make sure that this board, one of its purposes is for public education, so that we're getting a discussion. That's why staff, as our staff members, other than Kathy here taking our minutes, have left for the evening. This board cannot ask staff to do paperwork or compile things or do studies. This was something the board wanted for discussion, so it's out of their realm of working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can see some of the benefits, as you pointed out, access for everybody who had a computer. I mean, just because we have the house wired for, you know, for internet access doesn't mean those people are going to have a computer or know how to use it. It's not everybody conclusively. But the idea is if we built the infrastructure and had the system down, we would be so far ahead of the game as our community grows. For people using broadband in their homes for education, for personal uses, for communications, for our businesses, if our business had access to it, they would be able to you know, conduct business over the internet, sell their products, or the hotels and restaurants would be able to advertise on the internet without having to develop their own in-house service for broadband. I'm not sure, I wasn't able to look in some of the things that were most interesting to me, which is public safety mm-hmm. and our communications. Even cell phones go down, you know, earthquakes, there's a lot of things that can affect that, solar flares and all kinds of things. You know, and we need to be able to function. So there's a lot of different angles that can be a benefit, and I'm hoping that there's enough of a dialogue of this, not saying we have to do this or we don't have to do this, but that we discuss it enough that people are getting themselves a little familiar with it, so that if they see something that is of interest to them, that they continue the discussion so that we can find the benefits for our community, help stimulate discussion about those to draw more interest. And personally, I'm going to kind of jump ahead a little bit and say that this is something, I mean, our city is pretty much, our pockets are empty. You know, we're financially in hard times, and that causes a lot of staff and politicians to say, we can't even think about it. And I think that's a little unfortunate, only from the standpoint that if you don't think about it, you never find the money. This is one of those things where I think if there's enough interest in the public, we've got a lot of bright people in this city. We have people that know how to write grants, both municipal and private. We have people that can do a little bit of an idea of what's been going on in some of our emails so that they know what we're talking about. Because, well, I don't think most people really understand Wi-Fi. What does that mean, and how could that help me?
Right.
So excuse me for jumping the gun there. I want to turn it back over to you, Ann. And
I actually Googled financing Wi-Fi or broadband, and there's over a million documents on the internet. I downloaded one 21-page document today, so I haven't had time to read it all the way through because I've been busy. But that's another thing. You can find anything you want on the internet, just about, you know. Maybe not your mother's recipe, but a lot of other things. So there's a lot of things to help us as we move along and open the discussion with the interested people in town, so that we can make some informed decisions, you know. And that's kind of where I'm trying to push it.
Have you taken a look at the health risks that Wi-Fi?
Yes, I have.
How do you feel about what's out there?
Let me put it this way. I can't prove to you that there are none, and they can't prove to me that there are some.
Okay.
And that's everything I have found has been very much anecdotal. For instance, there are documents on the web that claim that, I'll use the example of Manchester, England. And I think in about 2001, there was publicized that they took all of their Wi-Fi and antennas and those things down because of the health dangers. If you go to Manchester's web page today, they are wired from one end of town to another. So they have obviously studied it and felt that either the risks were so minor or non-existent that they went ahead and eventually implemented their plan. And I just haven't seen anything that has a scientific basis that has convinced me. I mean, I have a cell phone, I have a microwave, I have a television set, I have radios, I have power wires. I think about 3 years ago, I think it was Charter came and strung another wire across from Shasta, across Main Street there, and I opened the front door and thanked him because I don't.
And what about the security in this? You know, right now, we all have internet. I mean, we're over the fiber optic cable, and we have hackers on there, and we know we have that risk. But I really am a little cautious about putting my credit card number on some radio thing, where it's much easier to intercept.
Yeah.
So what kind of security have they got for this system?
I don't know. Amazon's got my number.
And it's got to be a lot better. There's got to be some advantage to it over what we have now.
Yeah.
Or why bother?
That comes under encryption, and that would there'd be a layer of it at the higher level,
right,
plus your own passwords for the various things, transactions that you wish to make. It would be no different than I have wireless in my home. And when I go online, sometimes I have a very low frequency, and
It'll even go offline, and then I'll open it up, and I'll open my networks up, and there's two neighbors, and I don't know who they are, but I see their connection, and sometimes my computer connects to them, and then I have to go through my list and take them off and say, no, I want my own connection, and then I go through. I don't know. I've been using a computer for 13 years, and I haven't had any problems with identity theft or, you know, hacking into my machine. I am fairly careful. I have a good antivirus system. It's free.
Well, we all have to do that.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You're talking about you're on the standard fiber optic system, like
I'm on cable.
Well,
I'm on a cable
like,
DSL.
Like Charter.
Yeah, I'm on Charter.
Now, they just raised it they just raised the price.
Mm-hmm.
It was $7 a month. AT&T. The other day, I was talking to them. They're like 25, including the cable modem.
You can get AT&T broadband on AT&T for less than $14.99 a month.
Yeah,
if you go online and sign up for it.
No,
this is the competition. They all, and that's another thing. I don't see the advantage to the town allowing Charter or AT&T or Comcast or anybody else to come in and reap. This kind of puts the shoe on the other foot. Instead of us paying all that money as a city to Charter, they have to pay us a little. And they reduce our costs by the fact that we own the lines or the last mile or whatever program we end up with.
Can I take another tack for just a moment, because I think we're having a very valuable discussion, but I'd like to hear what Ms. Vick also has to say.
Yeah.
As she's here.
Right.
And
keep in mind, too, we're not going to solve any of these things.
No, no.
We're just bringing this up for discussion. This
right.
is just trying to introduce right. the idea and to make us think a little bit so that we maybe do a little more research and right. gather some more people from the public that are interested to try to help us. Well, let's find out what these issues are, because I don't know. You know, it's discussion, and people from the community are coming here to help us, and this is what we're here for. So,
I think Judy should have her
yeah.
her turn, because I know she had some information.
But don't go away, Anne, because you're very much a part of this.
Good evening, Chair and Board, and I.
Your name, please.
Judy Vick, Los Osos, your neighbor. I came particularly because it was an opportunity to educate the community, and so I'm hoping I'll have a chance to read through some of my information. I'd like to know approximately how much time I have.
This is basically a discussion item. You're not limited to 3 minutes. We're here
oh,
to discuss.
Good.
We've been here a couple hours already. I don't think we'd like to be here till midnight, and
right.
I think we need proclamation to go past 10 o'clock. So.
No, I won't put you through that, but if you'll bear with me, this is very technical information. I think that's one of the reasons why people become overwhelmed with it and say, you know, that's great, but I don't want to know that much. So I've written a document that's fairly in layman's terms, and I've researched this over about the last 2 years. I've networked with people around the state of California who've been very active in this issue in terms of public health. But I want to start out because Anne mentioned some really great benefits of the internet. And I agree with her, and I'm on the internet every day. And I think it's very important to realize that we want people to have access to the internet, but there's a safe alternative. So normally I start out, I end with the safe alternative, but I'm going to start out with a safe alternative because Anne brought up all the benefits. And of course, everyone's going to want access to the things that she mentioned. But I want you to know. Some very progressive places, and this is something where I'm going to ask you to keep an open mind for a little bit, because while most of us trust systems that are in place in our country, and we by and large are fortunate for being able to trust those things, we also have had some things in history where we have learned too late. And as you're learning from your nitrate issue, I'm hoping we can learn before we put these types of systems into place and be preventative in our planning. So I'm going to read this to you, and I promise not to read the whole document, and I'm going to skip a little bit, so if you follow along, it probably won't be word for word, just because I'm not going to bore the public with every little bit of research. Here we go. The wireless industry asserts that the Federal Communications Commission guidelines that provide safe levels of radiation exposure, that there are safe guidelines of radiation exposure, but there are a growing number of doctors, physicists, and health officials who strongly disagree and foresee a public health crisis. These public health officials are at Harvard, Boston University's School of Public Health. These are very knowledgeable experts. The U.S. FCC is in charge of setting the standards of exposure for the public and claims that based on scientific studies, the current levels are safe. And I'm talking about the radiation that Wi-Fi emits. But the FCC is not a public health agency and has been criticized as being an arm of the wireless industry. Many who work for the FCC are either past, present, or future employees of the very industries that they seek to regulate. With a $40 billion industry at stake, critics have stated that the industry studies may just show what the industry wants them to show. We need to be reminded that our federal government, in many ways, is helpful to us, but it also once told us that asbestos, cigarettes, formaldehyde, and our blood supply were all safe, but were later found to be extremely harmful. So please listen with an open mind. There are many scientists and advocacy groups that say that the current FCC's safe standards are based on 1985 research that was provided to them by the wireless industry. And it fails to consider more recent research that has found brain cancer, memory impairment, DNA breakdown, which translates to cancer and leukemia, and neurological problems with radiofrequency radiation at much lower levels than the safe guidelines that the FCC has indicated. Earlier research studies considered only the thermal or heating effects of radiation. So in other words, when people say this is no different from your microwave, studies considered only the thermal or heating effects of the radiation. In other words, the level at which the radiation could cook your tissue in the same exact manner that a microwave oven works. The FCC levels ensure that we will not be cooked, but they fail to address long-term chronic exposure at low levels or what's referred to as non-thermal effects. I don't know that many people know that 3 out of 4 independent, non-industry-sponsored research studies worldwide are showing biological effects from low-level, non-ionizing radiation similar to that used in wireless communications. Over 100 physicians and scientists at Harvard and Boston University Schools of Public Health have called cell towers a radiation hazard. 33 delegate physicians from 7 countries have declared cell phone towers a public health emergency. Now, many people say, why are you talking about cell phone towers when we're talking about Wi-Fi? It's the same type of radiation, and it's emitting at a lower level than the FCC guidelines. And so in that respect, you're talking pretty much about the same thing, and cell towers run 24/7, as I mentioned. Children are at the greatest risk due to their thinner skulls and rapid rate of growth, and also at risk are the elderly, the frail, and pregnant women. The Environmental Protection Agency, our EPA, does not agree with the safety standards that the FCC has set. And analysts have recommended that electromagnetic radiation be classified as a probable human carcinogen. Okay, so I'm not going to go into great detail about this research, but I want to mention that at the end of this, I'll give my contact information. Anyone that's interested, I can forward you volumes of research to back up what I'm saying. The power output of a typical Wi-Fi hotspot may be lower than a typical cell station or a cell tower, but it raises identical public health issues as a typical cell tower. Wi-Fi enthusiasts will dismiss health risk concerns because the power output and specific absorption rate, or what's called SAR, exposure is significantly below the minimum standard that's set for a cell phone. But cell phone standards are set for the short-term exposure pressed to your head, and the Wi-Fi exposure is not a cell phone's brief blast, but a 24/7 persistent bath of low-strength radiofrequency radiation. There are the International Association of Firefighters called for a moratorium in 2004 of cell towers being placed on fire stations. And historically, that was a great location to put a cell tower because it's typically centrally located in communities. Firemen were getting ill internationally and were studied, and there was a Wi-Fi hotspot. If it's located near your house or apartment, an example would be an antenna mounted on a light or utility pole, the radiation levels may actually be higher than those from a more distant cell tower. And power levels like your appliances at home, are drop off as you distance yourself from that appliance. A Wi-Fi radiation is designed to create a constant beam that does not drop off with distance. So that also concentrates your exposure. And power levels are not only the cause for concern. The pulsed modulated frequency, the wave of the Wi-Fi signal, is also at issue, just like with cell towers. The type of wave interacts with our DNA cells. And you need to also consider, as we've mentioned, you know, I mean, as we know, and Ann mentioned all these cities that have put these things into place, cities are becoming inundated, and they're the cumulative effect. So you might have a Wi-Fi hotspot, and I know this is true for cell towers. There are communities that are fighting voraciously against this proliferation of antennas that are going up. So I helped a woman in, on Highway 1 who had a cell tower about 200 feet to the right of her house, and certain people didn't talk to each other, and there was another one proposed for the other side of her house. And luckily we were able to go and make that case that, you know, this was overexposure, unnecessary for the coverage that was needed to provide cell phone coverage. But this is happening. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing, and communities are becoming absolutely blanketed. So if you're rest assured that the, you know, you're saying, well, Judy, I don't believe you, and I think it's that if it's low levels, no concern, you should see some of the overhead maps of San Francisco, where neighborhoods are just, it's like, it looks like a spider web, just completely blanketed. So when you're thinking about being all for this, you need to consider who's going to be the watchdog. Are you going to need to assign someone? That's their sole purpose, is to track these things and make sure that there's not this concentrated radiation exposure. There are many activist groups that are asking for master plans so that this type of thing doesn't happen. The head researcher for the wireless industry, Dr. George Carlo, led up a $28 million study to determine health impacts from cell phones. And again, same type of radiation, but shorter exposure and a higher level, shorter exposure. Mention again that in addition to the health concerns, Wi-Fi poses other community problems. Wi-Fi networks, again, are easier to hack and launch viruses, leaving communities vulnerable to identity theft and computer viruses. I again want to say there is a great alternative, and it really, since you are saying, you know, you don't have the budget to put this something like this in right away, it'd be tremendous to be thinking about the viable alternative, which is a wired local area network. And to use a wired local area network, you plug the computer or the device into the wall socket, and a wire leads from the socket to a router, which manages signal traffic between the devices on the network. And the major benefit of the wired LAN in reducing your risk is you get all the benefits that Ann mentioned previously. You have all the freedom of access, and you have all the goodies, and you have the assurance that you're not exposing your community to growing levels of radiation. Let's see what else here.
So would that be considered the same concept as the fiber optic?
Yes.
That is the same.
Yes.
The last mile idea.
Right. And, it, you know, while potentially more expensive than Wi-Fi, it says municipally owned 10 gigabyte fiber optic broadband is a model that could return on a city or county's investment and completely compete successfully with established cable and internet providers. So I want to mention also that Mendocino County and San Francisco County are adopting what's called the precautionary principle, which basically is a guiding framework for decision making that anticipates how actions will affect the environment and the health of future generations. Mm-hmm. And I've written more about it in the material I have provided to you, but I'd like you, since you're having this dialogue and considering these things, to consider adopting that for your city. I think that, to me, government's sole, number one, I should say sole, but primary responsibility is protecting its citizens. And I hope the information I've provided is at least interesting, if not informative and maybe motivating. And if anyone would like to get a hold of me, my email is VentureMind, VENTURE, MIND at hotmail.com. Again, VentureMind at hotmail.com. And I'd be happy to respond and email you. Just be patient with me. I work 40 hours a week, and I'm doing other things too. But I would be happy to, if you give me a reasonable amount of time to get back to you, send you research to back up what I'm saying. I'd be happy to meet
all aspects, the health, the economics, and the practicality. Would you be interested, you and Ann, both be interested in serving on this community, on this committee? Excuse me.
I would be, because of other extensive commitments that I got myself into, what I'll say is I would be happy to attend a number of them, maybe four or five of them, and lead you in the right direction, get you connected to people who I think are far more knowledgeable than I am, science backgrounds, around the state of California and beyond, that could assist if you need more research or more information. I can give you a lot of good information and get you rolling, and then maybe be a consultant to the committee. But with my current commitments, I couldn't say I could be on a committee long term.
Just to make sure that I'm understanding, you're not opposed to the technology of having a Wi-Fi or some kind of technology that the community as a whole could hook into, as Ann is suggesting.
Well, I'm flattered that anyone's concerned with what I would want, being that I live in Los Osos. But what I'll say is, I would, from the research I've done, I think that you would have a safe alternative and a wonderful alternative for all the goodies that were mentioned prior about internet access being to all and all those great things. Again, with the wired local area network, which will give you all the benefits without the risk. And I would be in support of that. And again, it would be something that your city would financially benefit from. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
I think you're also a very viable person to be discussing this. You've been involved in it for a long time, and I appreciate your efforts on behalf of your position, and I think they need to be shared. So,
I really appreciate the forum and the opportunity for the public to hear about it. It's something that, you know, when you have a $40 billion industry advocating for their stakeholders, their shareholders, and their profits, you're going to get a lot of really beautiful advertisements encouraging, you know, and just highlighting the benefits. But, you know, this is just good old-fashioned research, and it shows another side of the story. So thank you so much.
Well, I want to say at this point, thank you both. And I hope that it sounds like the board, and I'm hoping that the public at home realizes that there isn't a conflict in the idea of enhancing our community. Just two different strategies of doing it, and this is part of what I think the dialogue should be. I do research. That's my area of study. And trunk, I think I'm using the right term, that comes off of the coast of Morro Bay. I have no idea if the city even has an easement on that. Why we don't have access to that, I don't know. Why it's there and we don't, it could be on private property, I don't know.
Because they paid a lot of money to the city in order to put it there. Yeah. I think they paid $400,000.
Yeah. And our city didn't have enough foresight at that time to know that there could be real benefit for the city to have, hey, we'd like access to it.
That may be.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. Or, you know, but I mean, maybe we didn't know. This is something that, to me, I think has so much potential that I don't want to see it die in a discussion over what format, you know, we go. The health risks, I've read a lot of research, and I think it's pretty overwhelming that there are problems there. And if we've got a better option, then let's go with a better option. Let's get together and find out. To me, the most important thing at this point is the benefits of having, you know, a municipally owned or municipally based mechanism for communication has so much potential that it seems like it would be a very nice idea for us to try to stimulate more support for that, for the specific different groups in the business industry, in the hotel, restaurant industry, for private citizens, for education, for public safety, for government. A little bit of interest in each one of those areas might spark some ideas where people say, you know, maybe there is something beneficial to us, so we'll put a little more work into it.
As a board, can we make a suggestion that the city council? Well, I'm not familiar with the procedure again. I'd like to see this continued. I'd like to see both Ann and Judy come to the council or get in on a committee. Mm-hmm. I would like to see us pursue it, and I'm not sure what the
mechanism is to have the city council do that.
Well, I think as a board, I think we have, we're certainly within our bounds to send some type of a motion to the council saying we think it should be looked into. Like I said, if we get the cold shoulder, or we just don't have time, or we just don't have money, it might be something that as individual citizens we might need to come together without even council forming a committee, but us getting together and trying to get more information so as we go to council we've got a better package for them. You know, I don't know where the rest of the board is. I'm certainly willing to support or even word a motion to say the council, we'd like the council to encourage the formation of a committee to investigate this kind of...
That's the motion. Thank you.
Or should, the committee be out of this group? Why should the city council have the committee when we're kind
no,
of
No, I don't
like
mean the city council have the committee. Council would support in some way a citizens' committee
so
to
like
explore
an ad hoc committee?
Ad hoc is... I don't think there's time duration on ad hoc. Ad hoc is a committee for a specific purpose, but it's usually of a short duration. You know, like I said, I'd certainly would want to encourage council to maybe not throw it on them to just take it over, but to support and encourage a committee to form.
That was my intent, yes. Not to have council do it, but set it in motion.
Set it in motion. How does
so
the,
that we could get Ann and Judy and other citizens, as you've mentioned, who are bright and intelligent in this field, that could get together and come up with a mechanism that would work for Morro Bay, keeping in mind the health keeping in
and
mind
and then that would take
else.
That would mean we
yeah, I'm getting
have
the impression
problems.
Though that you're thinking that this is a system the city should take over and run and sell it to the citizens, supposedly make a profit. Now, the city hasn't chosen to buy electricity wholesale and sell it to the customers, which has a lot more profit potential in it than this does, I think. And I don't see any advantage in this system at the present time. In fact, I think the advantages are all with the fiber optics, and until I see a lot more information that might turn my mind. But I think the fiber optic system is a way to stay.
Well, we're discussing fiber optics as much as, you know, as when Ann has said Wi-Fi and Judy has said fiber optics, they're two different mechanisms for doing
but
a similar
Wi-Fi
thing.
Wi-Fi is radio.
Okay, yeah. So maybe Wi-Fi isn't the option and fiber optic is. But the ultimate goal is to have a mechanism of expanded communication within our city. That's they're not conflicting each other on that issue.
Well, I say this. There's no difference there if they haven't taken up the electric power thing, so why would they bother going with something else?
But no action keeps us nowhere.
This could be years down the line,
yes.
But I mean, being on it and doing this kind of groundwork and developing it means that we have a potential in the future to have something that we don't have now that could, I mean, the potential for, in our city, the only tax revenue we really get is sales tax revenue.
Well, I'd like to call the question. Let's vote on it.
What's the question?
We need a motion here first, I suppose.
Well, Ann has something she may want to say.
Let her say it.
Okay, go ahead, Ann.
I just wanted to extrapolate a little bit on what you said. If you were to recommend or feel the council out in some way about needs, but this does,
right.
Or this would help us, but that certainly wouldn't. You know, just to start the groundwork with some practical.
I think that's really what we're looking at. I mean,
looking at something similar to the futures mm-hmm. committee that council mm-hmm. member Melody mm-hmm. DeMarin yeah. is in charge of.
Yeah.
A committee like that has a broad base of technical knowledge, and et cetera, that could get together once a month.
Everybody could contribute information that they're the expert in, so that you end up with something a little more professional than what I've given you.
Well, you've brought this to our attention, and I'll admit there's some issues that are very relevant to things that I've been working on in my own direction of research in my master's program that I'm looking at. So that's why I'm trying to encourage not, let's jump on this and let's go, but let's get this together as citizens. We have a very small community, and we have the potential to use that to our advantage to bring together some wonderful resources. I don't want to do something that puts a burden on city council or one board or another to do it, and that's why I think a real call of interest to the city in general, to its citizens, that's what makes a community project. And I feel very passionate about that aspect. And that doesn't mean I'm saying one way is better than another. I'm saying that the development of ideas, one person says something to another person, it triggers ideas in them, they share it with a few more friends, they bring more input that actually feeds the potential for what it could be used for. There are potentials with this that we can't even see right now. And you know, does that mean we don't look? I'm not that kind of thinker. So, like I said, I don't want to burden council and say, we demand you form a committee. I mean, if we sit around at a coffee shop and talk about it, I'd be happy that would be a start. But I think we
can get council to at least
mention it and support it.
And support it and encourage it and express an interest on behalf of the community. I think we need to find out whether, one, it'll work, two, is it safe, and three, can we do it?
Okay.
And once those three questions are answered and determined, then I think we have a path to follow. But I think I'd like to see a subcommittee formed, whatever way it's formed.
Well, a subcommittee would be a subcommittee of a standing committee.
Whatever.
And so to broaden that out,
right.
Maybe just a citizens committee. If we call it Wi-Fi, we're calling it one thing. If we call it fiber optic, we're calling it something else. So I'm trying to think of language that would cover this. As far as abstentions? Okay, so that is, can I count? That is 4 in favor and 1 opposed. Olson opposed?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Okay. You know, in a small community, sometimes things can actually happen, and it takes arguing and dissension as well. And I know Bill's got some ideas down there that he's going to bring to us in this whole process, even though he doesn't like it at this point. He has too much experience.
In socialism is a failure. Whoever's tried, you know.
Ms. Vick, Ann, thank you very much for your help. This is the first time we've actually had a board-initiated issue without staff involved in that to have a discussion on something brought to us from the community. And I got to say, after 7 years, that's a really, really cool thing.
And I hope both of you follow up. Don't let this fall asleep or die on the
way. And anybody watching, too, please contact us. I think all of our phone numbers and email addresses if you want to get in contact with some of us. You know, if it ends up, like I said, you know, you're sitting around at the coffee shop and trying to come up with some ideas, it's looking at them. And that means pros and cons, weighing things. We've got to know the bad side, too, or we're not going to plan for it. So thank you very much, and I really hope that we get some bright ideas because we got some gosh darn smart people in Morro Bay.
Thank you.
Thank you both. And Los Osos, Cayucas, all around. Okay, we have moved on now to 10 future agenda items. For February, the most important thing that we have, we will have new members, and we will need elections for chair and vice chair. And since staff has already left us, I do not know if there are any other issues that they foresee will be coming to us. So I think, unless somebody else has some good suggestions for future agenda items.
Actually, I do.
Yeah, Noah, go ahead.
I was going to suggest that at that point, also when we elect vice chair and chair, to look at potentially subcommittees, any subcommittees. And this Wi-Fi issue could potentially be one of those, I guess, down the road. But
okay.
To open the dialogue up about potential subcommittees, that would be appropriate.
Yeah. I know, I think it was last year when we had so much discrepancy over whether or not we had subcommittees or standing, we made a motion to actually dissolve anything, whether we knew it was there or not, and start over.
That's a good
So I've got that down. Roger, did you have anything?
I have a couple.
Okay.
I would keep potentially getting updates on where our nitrate levels are in the wells that were showing high readings, and I know that city is continuing to test these.
Well, keep in mind, too, that the only reason that we had nitrates in our city were predominantly state water.
Only
reason that we were doing that was because we were in the state water shutdown, which happens every November.
Yeah.
So, you know, we might not have even, you know, had to even
them or be using
exactly
them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I still think it's
but I think
we do
routine
monitor.
Testing.
Yeah.
I think there is testing that
yeah.
goes on, and Bill would be the person that would know that off the top of his head.
I would support the need for that update on the nitrate levels.
I, It's really simple, just, you know, it helps to keep an idea of, you know, the process. Or
definitely. I think at this point, with the ongoing discussion and with the changes, I think that would be something Bill would probably have in his director's report as bonus. But I'll got it on my list, so I'll make sure that's a phone call to him to say, make sure we get that information.
And then I have at the last city council meeting, the Morro Bay Beautiful group came and did a presentation on their project for the downtown trash cans beautification project, and which seemed like potentially a good idea to invite Morro Bay Beautiful into a similar format discussion that we just had to potentially present this this program that they have, and a good way to get information about Morro Bay Beautiful out to the citizens and our board to just keep, it seems like a good group for us to be in touch with. So we could potentially invite them for a discussion type item.
Okay. Roger, do you have anything?
Yes, just one, please. I'd like sometime in the near future, maybe not necessarily the next meeting, but fairly soon, an update on the Green Accords.
We had that on my last list and as a tentative, but we didn't specify for this meeting. So,
thank you.
Thank you for keeping it alive.
I also heard from someone on the city council that there is a contract in the works, or update of a contract from AGP, which is the people that do our video presentations.
Mm-hmm.
We were potentially thinking maybe it would be good to have have them come to the meeting, have a representative come to the meeting and explain what it is that they offer as a service, what the cost is of the service, how it could possibly be improved, what they're planning for the future. Just okay. Educate us.
I stay with Charter.
Yeah,
and that's why most of us stay with Charter, because we're concerned about this.
Right.
But now the DISH system has taken on Channel 6, you know, it's whatever you call it, KSBY, is that
mm-hmm.
it?
Their local station Lewiston. Here.
And I don't know, maybe they got the other local
right.
ones too.
I think it has to do with the standards on PEG access.
Some way to try to get Channel 20 onto the DISH.
Ah, something that could be built through a municipal communication broadband system.
That have the DISH can see it.
you know, what the hell? You
bless
know?
You, Vicki, bless you.
But this is about half of the city. Yeah. About half of the city.
And I don't watch TV. I only have my computer. If I had access to the meetings through my computer.
You haven't got Channel 20 on your computer either.
Well, what I'm saying is the potential is there to do that.
It is.
The technology is already accessible.
But anyway, I'd like to see that.
Would it be possible to have Nancy and or Steve come and make a presentation on what?
Well, how about I give them a call in the next week or so and see what their schedule is?
But to include what Bill was saying, you know, is there a way to do it? More as an information.
Well, I know some people that are in the technical aspect that have told me that is very easy to do, whether or not it's so expensive to outlay. I mean, a company as small as AGP would be able to afford whatever equipment it would take. I don't know. But the technology exists.
Well, I think whether it'd be a good idea just to have them come and as an informational process to.
What's that? We have an AGP representative with us right now.
Hi, Jimmy Forte, AGP Video. Yeah, the technology is there. We are doing that for other agencies. We are streaming meetings. Every state meeting that Steve Matthews does is streamed on the web. It's definitely there. We are using it.
We have the
and,
technology.
I'm sure that Steve and Nancy would be willing to come down, let you guys know what's happening, and it's there. And it's
I think it'd be a fine benefit to the community at large to have them do so.
Maybe the best angle to go after the DISH company, because it's a good sales point for them, too. You know, for them, too.
Well, I think it has something also to do with the contract that we have with Charter.
That
could be explained
well,
by
Well, that's the
Nancy
PEG access. They're required to carry the public access and educational and government channels. And it's like, what was it, three? It was like three or five. There was a set limit. Then a couple of meetings ago when we got all that documentation that told. How about you? Future agenda items? Pardon?
I have my say.
Okay. No future agenda items?
Well,
that's true. Okay.
The streaming.
Okay.
The streaming. Getting the local JPEG, their peg on the
on the dish.
It was part of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we're set as far as that goes. Oh, next item. Gosh, look, it's adjournment. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Oh, so moved.
Any second?
So second.
You don't need
that.
I'll second.
Yes. I can declare us adjourned. I know. I'm trying to be diplomatic in that regard. This is the last meeting I'll be able to adjourn. I should do it, shouldn't I? Well, I will not be chairing at the end of next meeting, only at the beginning of next meeting.
You may be not willing to be chair.
I don't think it would be appropriate for me to be chair in my last year on the board. I think it would be appropriate for somebody else to move in.
Oh, to get the experience?
Exactly. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is the adjournment of the Public Works Advisory Board. Thank you for joining us. We will be returning next month, February 21st, Wednesday, 6 p.m., live in the Vets Hall. Please join us, and thank you for being with us. Thank our staff members, Mr. Boucher, Mr. Cunningham, and Kathy Weaver for taking our minutes. Have a good night.